Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Denise Michaud, co-chair of the club's grown-ups forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Our program tonight is Avoiding Scams, Fraud, and Financial Exploitations. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. Mary Toomey, an aging program specialist of the Office of Elder Justice and Adult Protective Services. Mary has a long history of spearheading programs to protect the elderly. She spent 11 years at AARP in charge of their National Guardianship Monitoring Program. She was former co-director of both the National Center of Elder Abuse and Center of Excellence on Elder Abuse and Neglect at UC Irvine. She also ran a consortium for elder abuse prevention in San Francisco. Mary's interest in aging and elder justice issues was kindled when her grandparents came to live with her when she was a child. Mary has a master's degree in social work with a concentration in gerontology. Please welcome Mary Toomey.
Thank you so much, Denise. I'm really happy to be here. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to come and learn about scams and fraud. I have a few goals tonight. One, I'm hoping that we end, that I'll stop talking long enough that we can actually have a discussion and take questions and answers, because I know that you all have had experiences with this issue, or you probably wouldn't be here, and that you have a lot to teach. We have a lot to teach each other about, one, how you've avoided scams and frauds, or your tips for avoiding it, or how you've helped other people avoid it. So that's my first goal. My second goal is I do not want to bore you, so we will be rapping. We have a rap song about elder abuse later on. I'm hoping that there's something I say in the time we have together tonight that imparts a kernel of new information that will help you not fall victim to elder abuse and scams and frauds. And then I also want to set scams and frauds in the larger context of elder abuse. So how does that sound? Sounds pretty good. All right. So talking about scams and frauds, like where to start, is not super easy because it's a really big topic and there's a ton of information out there about avoiding scams and frauds. Some of it's directed to a senior audience, some of it's directed to just, you know, regular Americans, not older Americans. And, you know, we could spend an hour talking just about one kind of scam or fraud. We could spend an hour talking about romance scams, sweetheart scams. We could talk about for an hour about ID theft, what to do, how to avoid it, all that. So I wanted to share with you how I've sort of organized our time together. Because also the other thing I think is I heard someone say, oh, I hope she talks about all the, you know, are there new scams? Well, there's a new scam every day. That's the problem, right? Like, so I wanted to talk about sort of who becomes a victim. Who are the characteristics of victims of scams and frauds? How and by what means are scams and frauds perpetrated? What are the general categories of scams and frauds? What are some of the warning signs that, regardless of how they're reaching you or what they're saying, some bell should be going off, like, this, something's not right here? And what to do if you believe you've been a victim of a scam or a fraud. So that's kind of how I've organized our time together. But I think we should start with a rap song, don't you think? I woke up one morning and I was old. All of a sudden, people, they treat me cold. They hit me, they hurt me, they call me bad names. They take my money, they have no shame. But I have a secret, I'll share it with you here. Listen closely as you draw near. I am old and I am positive. I have wisdom, I'm going to tell it like it is. I may be disabled, but I'm not obtuse. There's no excuse for elder abuse. You call me on the phone, say, I've won a prize. I won't listen when you tell me your lies. You say, buy an annuity. I say, buddy, you can't fool me. You leave me alone when I need aid. You don't give me food and you leave me to fade. Later you say, oh, I didn't know better. Can you spell neglect? Letter by letter, I am old and I am positive. I have wisdom. I'm going to tell it like it is. I may be disabled, but I'm not obtuse. There's no excuse for elder abuse. So now you can say, I went to the Commonwealth Club and I heard a rapper. Whoa. So let's talk a little bit about characteristics of victims. One of the things I hear all the time is, how could someone have fallen for that? How could someone have fallen for that? So let me just start by saying that though we talk a lot about scams and frauds in the context of older adults, and I'm going to be 60 this year, about to join you, that millennials actually have the highest rate of becoming victims of fraud. They're at 40%. Older adults are at 18%. The difference is that you're targeted because we're targeted. I'm going to start using we. We're targeted because we have more money. You target a millennial, like what, they have a skateboard and they're paying, you know, $400 for a room in someone's house. So they don't have a lot of money. If they're targeting those of us who have worked their whole lives, built up pensions, built up savings accounts, the loss is much, much greater. So seniors lose more money. The vulnerability to scams and frauds, I came up with like a mnemonic because we weren't using PowerPoint tonight. And I know for myself, I'm a bit of a visual learner, but so we don't have the visual. I decided to use a mnemonic. The people who are victims of scams and frauds, often when you look beneath that, you find that three things, one of three things, or perhaps all three things, all of these three things are going on. There's a dementia. So there's some sort of cognitive impairment. They are distraught as a result of a recent grief and loss, or they're distanced. So they're isolated. They're apart from family and friends, or perhaps family and friends are nearby, but they're either keeping themselves at isolated, or they are isolated by others. So dementia, let's take a moment there. I was talking as we were all gathering to some of you were telling me stories about victimization of loved ones. I mean, has anyone known anyone who, because of a cognitive impairment, you can just raise your hand or shake your head, lost money because they didn't understand what was going on? So mild cognitive impairment is a subset of dementia where people usually can go about the activities of daily living. They can get up, they can do their cooking, they can go shopping, they can go to their religious services, and make fine choices in those realms, but their judgment is slipping. So their memory might still be fine and their activities of daily living are fine, but their judgment is impaired. And it's that impairment of judgment that will trip someone up. When somebody lies to them on the phone and says you've won the Canadian lottery and the person can't remember the last time they were in Canada, so you wouldn't think that this person that you know who can get up and, as I said, you know, make breakfast and go to church and et cetera, that person would be a victim of a scam like that. But when judgment starts to go, people don't put two and two together. It doesn't equal four, it equals five. So when somebody is saying, I have this thing for you and it equals five, they're like, yeah, it equals five, and they'll fall for that scam. So there's also been a study, and I have one copy of it, that was looking at particular kinds of lesions in the frontal temporal lobe of certain kinds of people that make them really susceptible to fraudulent comments. So even when somebody else says, like the example that I remembered is somebody said, this product usually costs $100, and we're going to give it to you for half price, $69.99. Well, I'm really bad at math, but I know the 50% of 100 is 50, not $69.99. But for those people with these particular kinds of frontal temporal lobe lesions, that actually made sense to them. They were able to, they only believed that they're going to save 50%. That's all they got to. So we have to be aware what our cognitive state is and the cognitive state of people around us. So if we start to see things that make us nervous, we can put plans into place so that those people don't become victimized. People under grief and loss or people who are depressed, their brains often act like people who are demented. But it's not a dementia. It's temporary. It's as a result of the trauma of grief and loss. But, you know, they say you should never make a big decision after the death of a loved one for up to a year. People who are scammers, they'll research who's experienced a recent loss, and they'll target you as a result. They'll target us as a result of that loss. And so we have to be especially vigilant during times of grief and loss. And again, the distance. One of the number one predictors for all kinds of elder abuse is isolation. And one of the things we know about growing older as we, it's the opposite of when you get married and have a kid. Having a child sort of thrusts you voluntarily or involuntarily into all these circles. People have to go to the doctors, they have to go to school, they have to do daycare. Taking care of an older person or an adult with a disability, or being an older person or adult with a disability, we start to see that people pull away from activities that had connected them. And so isolation is a big predictor. I wanted to just take a moment because I thought some of you would be particularly interested in investment fraud. There was a study done by the AARP on who is victimized by investment fraud. And some of the findings I thought were particularly interesting. People who were victimized by investment fraud, so believed an investment scheme that someone else didn't believe, they valued wealth as a measure of success at rates greater than those who had not been scammed. So wealth meant a lot to them from a value point of view. They were open to new opportunities presented by the salesperson. They just were unlike the rest of us. I won't play it for you, but I had an opportunity come my way, and I hung up on the gentleman, and I have it on my cell phone. He called me back and left a message. Well, I'll tell you about it in a second, but I was not open to his opportunity, so he was not happy with me. But people who are victimized are often more open, and they're particularly open to opportunities that are not regulated. And there we start to get really close to the red zone of danger. So an unregulated opportunity is something to be wary of. They're comfortable taking chances. They're comfortable with high risk. And because of that, they somehow signal that to others, whether it's in their email correspondence, the kinds of websites they visit. They signal sort of out there to the world that they are interested in these kind of unregulated high risk, that they're comfortable with those. And as a result, they get twice as many invitations to participate in unregulated high risk opportunities. And they almost always interact with someone who is at a distance, not in person, not local, but somebody who's far away with whom they never meet. It's usually over the phone or it could be email. Demographically, these people tend to be older, they tend to be married, and they tend to be male. So I offer all of those characteristics not to blame or say, if you have these characteristics, if you're open to opportunities, is there something wrong with you or you're bad? I offer them because I'll call this section the mindfulness of aging. So I think the more we understand our own behavior and what we're willing to do, what our own values are, the more we are armed, our self-awareness arms us. So in the world of scams and frauds, they talk about this thing called the illusion of invulnerability, which is actually ironic because if you have an illusion of invulnerability, like, you know, my nephew, my cousin who thought it was just like super great at 12 to ride his bicycle off the garage because he was pretty sure he could get into the swimming pool and what could possibly go wrong. Well, much went wrong, but it was that illusion of invulnerability that actually leaves us open to vulnerability. And so how do we see ourselves as we're aging? Do we recognize that we are targets, that we are not the same people? We are not viewed the same by scammers and fraudsters in particular as we did when we were younger. So I have a story. A friend of mine's father moved to Costa Rica, And when she told me this, and she said they hadn't, her father hadn't been there that long, and he called and said that he had this really weird experience on the bus, that he was reading the newspaper on the bus down there, and every time he put his paper, newspaper down, there was this older guy staring at him. So he would go back to reading his paper. He would put the paper back down, guy staring at him, and he was new to that country. He did not speak Spanish. He didn't know how to engage the gentleman. So he's thinking that he needs to get off the bus because this is sort of unnerving. Well, you know the answer, right? He was looking in a mirror. So his sense of who he was so disconnected from reality. But he was not, he wasn't, he didn't have a mental illness or anything. He just had not recognized, he didn't recognize himself. And I guess, anyway, it just made me think. And the same way it did when I was at a meeting a friend for dinner, and I got to the place early. I got there early on purpose because I wanted, I had some reading to do. So it wasn't a fancy restaurant or anything, but I decided I would wait at the bar. I got a, they actually have half glasses of wine. So it was awesome. They also have half glasses, half pieces of pie, which is like my favorite thing. So a half glass of wine, half a piece of pie, waiting for my friend, doing my reading. Oh, but I didn't get my order yet. So I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And there are all these young people behind the bar, and they're talking and they're flirting, and that nobody took my order. And I was like, oh my God, it finally happened. I'm being ignored. And I'm not being ignored on purpose. It was, I don't know, does this make any sense? I finally had that moment where I realized, like many older women, like I'm just kind of invisible here. I'm not cute. I mean, I'm cute enough, but I'm not that cute. I mean, I'm not somebody who's like these 20-somethings who are so involved with each other, and probably I didn't look like wealthy enough that they were going to get like a good tip. I don't know. But it's that moment, and it was instructive for me because I still think I'm 35 and I'm 59. So this is the hardest part of this talk, because I feel like everybody wants information about how to avoid scams and frauds and this practical piece and this practical piece. But I really think that a big part of avoiding scams and frauds and elder abuse is self-awareness. That man on the bus in Costa Rica was taken by a scammer several times. Some of the diseases that we were talking about, like mild cognitive impairment and dementia and depression, they rob us from our ability to have insight that this person's stealing our money, this person that I really shouldn't trust, but I'm trusting. So we have to plan now for the possibility that who I am at 59 is not who I'm going to be at 79. So already, for example, my partner and I are talking about how, when I revisit my trust, I need to revisit my trust. And when I'm getting older, if anyone, how have I built a community that somebody's going to have the chutzpah to say to me, you can't manage that money anymore. You really can't. So you need a co-trustee, or you need this person or that person. It shouldn't have to be you've lost $200,000 for someone else to come in. So you have an opportunity. The fact that you're here, I'm really not worried about you all. I'm worried about the people who aren't here and or used to come and can't come. How do we recognize the ways that we're vulnerable today, the ways that we may be vulnerable? How do we plan to protect ourselves and the people we love? Because the scammers, this is why I really want to make sure that it gets loud and clear that no one is, when people are scammed and fraud, when they're victims, people are really, really ashamed of that. And they're really embarrassed. And that's a terrible thing, because the other side, these are professionals. You know, if you went up against, you were a little lightweight boxer in college and you went up against Mike Tyson, nobody would expect you to win. Why do we expect you to win against these people who spend every single day trying to think of creative ways to take your money? We have no chance. Like, the only way is to band together and fight. And that's part of today, is educating yourself. But don't feel bad. I mean, one of the statistics that's kind of scary is that only 14% of people who have been victims of scams or fraud report it. And so we don't actually know that much about it. I mean, we know a fair amount, but we want to know more. And part of it is reporting. And the other thing is, it has to be prevented, because once it happens, it's really hard to get the money back. And they know that. So, okay. So no blame, no shame. How are they getting to all of us? By phone, by U.S. mail, by email, through social media like Facebook and Instagram, sometimes in person, and sometimes in seminars and groups like this. You sign up to learn about a you know, living trust seminar at a place. Sometimes those might even be fraudulent. I think most of these are self-explanatory, phone, U.S. mail, email. I'll say a word about social media. There was a scam called the Facebook scam or the grandparent scam, where people would get information from social media because, you know, while my mother wasn't on social media, my sisters and my niece and nephews were on social media. And so I schooled them. You can post a picture of mom, but don't put her name. Don't put where she lives. Don't put anything like that that somebody could then use. So people might friend you on social media, or like my father will say, oh, I've got this friend request from this woman. I'm like, yeah, no, no. Do you know her? Do you know anybody who knows her? Do you have any idea who she is? No. In person, there's a set of scams where people will approach you on the street. They're called pigeon drops. I think you're the pigeon. I think we're the pigeons. I'm not positive, but they will approach you. You will be targeted as somebody who they could possibly pull this scam with. So, but there's two people. They're working in tandem, but they make it seem like they're strangers to each other. They've found a bunch of money. They open a bag. Oh, look at all this money. And on the top, it's like ones or fives. But what you don't know is underneath, it's newspaper. And so this woman comes up to you like, oh my God, I just found this in the curb. Oh, you know, and they say to you, what should we do? Should we? All of a sudden it's we, like, I don't even know you. Should we go to the bank? Should we go to a lawyer? Comes along the accomplice saying, oh, I know what to do. My brother is a cop. So you keep the money, but we'll meet at 4 o'clock. Brother, you can meet us at 4 o'clock. Okay. And then, I keep the money, but to show that I'm a person of good faith, these two people take me to the bank where I give them $500 because that's how I show that I'm a person of good faith. Meanwhile, I think I have more than $500 in the bag. So what could be the date? this attendee here is like, absolutely. But some of these go to cultural issues. This was one that was used a lot in the Chinese community. So we have language issues that are being used. We have there was a scam, very similar, where people were told that if they had jewelry or something, that it could be blessed. It was called a blessing scam. Anyway, all of this is to say this is one of the ways that people can do it, which is in person. And I'm also very wary. I think we have to really hold groups like senior centers and other places where folks are invited to come and talk to seniors in the way there's a sort of a captive audience. Sometimes professionals will say, you know, I'll offer everyone a free lunch, but it's really there for a business purpose. It has to be made really clear that there is a business purpose to whatever the luncheon is, whether it's, it doesn't matter, whatever the product is. So I think we have to hold those people who are doing the inviting to a certain standards to make sure that we don't inadvertently profit scammers and fraudsters by bringing them into groups of older adults. So those are kind of the how people get touched by scammers and fraudsters. The general categories of abuse and neglect, and I found that there were five of them, and I'll just say them quickly. They're consumer fraud, imposter fraud, romance scams, fraudulent marketing, and ID theft. So consumer repairs are the kind of thing where somebody comes to your home and says, you know, your roof, I think that looks like it could use a little work. You're lucky. Today's your lucky day. Today's your lucky day. It's sort of like my partner who's a judge said, yeah, the sentence that follows respectfully, Your Honor, is almost never respectful. So similarly, it's your lucky day, comma, probably not your lucky day. It's your lucky day. I just finished a job down on Portola, and just for like half the normal price, I would be happy to do this for you. And why don't you give me, you know, $400, I'll be back tomorrow. And they never show up again. But I've also heard of the opposite, where you call someone who you believe to be a legitimate plumber, let's say, and that person comes in and gives you a bid, and you know, everything seems above board. You have a bid, you sign it, you pay them the money, they come and they do the work, or they do part of the work and you've given them the money, but they leave the work undone. And they say it's going to be more money to finish the work. And then when that part is done, they say we got in and there was much more of a problem than we thought. Now your front yard is all ripped up and now they're saying you owe $4,000. So those are examples of consumer scams, repairs, home improvement, often that kind of ilk. And maybe later, if people have other examples, we can get to those. Imposter scams are just what they sound. Somebody pretending to be someone they are not in order to take your money. So the classic ones that we see right now are the IRS scam. You know, the IRS will not call you and tell you that you owe money. Your bank, jury, you know, you'll be arrested if you don't come in for jury duty, or you have to pay this money. Tech repair, and then the grandparent scam, where somebody pretends to be a grandchild or another young relative and says they're in jail. You all know this one? There's a lot of heads nodding. Okay. I just want to, like, so you have to send money. Please don't tell mom and dad. The romance scams are very, very sad, because often the person who is the victim has lost money and they've also had their heart broken. And this happens in every community. There was one recently that was very, very sad in the gay community. So it's not just in, you know, the straight community, or it goes across all socioeconomic and racial and other kinds of minorities. And this is where somebody is targeted. They're identified as being a recent widow or widower. Or it could just be, like, I go to Mel's Diner out on Geary a lot. So come by, free coffee. I'll give you a free coffee. You know, there are a lot of people that are there every day. And I could see where if you learned that somebody was there every day and that person had a lot of money, that one might be targeted. Sometimes the sweetheart is brought into the home to do something like home care and becomes a sweetheart scam. It didn't start as a sweetheart scam. It started as a legitimate purpose. But sometimes the person, older people, are targeted because they're recently widowed or because they seem lonely and have means. So the fraudulent marketing scams are, this is the whole raft of sweepstakes, lotteries, the Nigerian princes, work from home, charities. Let's say a word about charities. You know, America is a very generous country, but the other thing about sort of the timing of scams and frauds is often after every disaster that you can hear of. I'm sure there are scams right now about the volcano in Hawaii. I'm sure there are scams if there's a wildfire in Southern California. There'll be a scam about it. So people prey on your generosity, on our generosity, and we have to be aware of those. But fraudulent marketing is just lying to you, basically, by any means necessary. And then ID theft, which, you know, somebody by some means gets your information and uses it to pretend they are you, signs up, you know, opens credit cards, gets your social security benefits or other things like that. We decided to save questions to the end because it's easier, but I hate that. I'm just going to say that. I would like to make sure that any of this is useful, helpful, but we'll get to that in a second. Some of the warning signs that something is a scam or fraud, and again, hopefully we'll have time for you to say some of the ones that you've noticed in your work. Anything that requires you to hurry up, has to be done right now, is a warning sign today only, anything like that. If it's a limited offer and you were specially chosen, sorry, you're all special, but that's a tool that scammers are using to get to you. If it has to be kept a secret, like the grandparent scam, don't tell mom and dad I called you from the Tijuana jail. They'll just kill me. It has to be, if it's a secret, that's a big warning sign. This one is a little harder to talk about because you may all be members of groups, but we have to be careful when that affinity is used to get your trust. So veterans are often scammed by people promising to have been, saying that they were also Marines or whatever. I don't know if this happens in other places. Like I was a, your father was a police officer and they're saying, oh, I was a police officer too. But remember, you've been targeted. So people have done research on you. These are not just, they're not guessing that, you know, I'm a social worker. They know I'm a social worker, or they're not guessing that I used to work at Irvine. You don't have to do much more than Google Mary Toomey to see I used to work at UC Irvine. So they would be like, oh, you know, I went to Irvine too. Go anteaters, believe it or not. Like, really? So when it comes to like people who are grieving, a lot of times the way in with somebody is they will say that they knew the deceased husband or wife or went to school with them, something like that. So there's that. And related to that is sort of the emotional pull, like help me, help us, you know, disaster victims, all these things. So urgency, limited offer, secrecy, this sense of I know you already, I'm just like you, the emotional pull, that they require an advance fee, that they require you to wire something, both of those should be huge alarm bells. And if they're saying that you can't lose, there's no risk. There's no such thing as no risk. So those are some of the warning signs that regardless of the method that they're using to reach out to you or what kind of scam, what type of scam.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
So, I wanted to talk a little bit about ways to stay safe. So, and again, I'm going to do this really quickly so we can just start sharing ideas among all of you. You know, people say, I don't know why these people just don't hang up. So we can go back a moment to what we were talking about a few minutes ago about people with mild cognitive impairment, people who are desperately lonely, people who are not thinking maybe as clearly, or people who have a really high tolerance for risk and want to make money. Maybe I was talking to somebody who said her father was laid off during the downturn in 2008. And because of age discrimination, he could not get another job. And so the savings that he had expected was just not there. And he was really desperate to make money. And he was usually a very prudent person, but because of he couldn't get gainful employment, he was open in a way he might not have been. So there's not just the individual and what's characteristic of the individual. There's also characteristics of society and things like age discrimination, that have a role in making somebody sort of desperate for money. So anyway, people always say, hang up, or better yet, don't answer the phone. I don't know about you all, but on my cell phone now, I'm getting calls that look like my number. So that's I think that's a sort of psychologically a little bit of an affinity thing. Like, look, my number's just like yours. So we must know each other. I'm like, oh yeah, look at that. Oh, wait a minute. So now I'm just not answering my cell phone. I figure if it's a number that I don't know, they'll leave a message. So good for you. So don't answer, hang up. You know, you really, some of the carriers in the U.S. have robocall block, some don't. But you can, you know, obviously get on the do not call list. Though I'm on the do not call list on every single phone. And yeah, everybody's like, yeah, I'm sure it's weeding out some of them, but it's not weeding out all of them. You know, as I said about my mom, you really keep information off social media. Experts say to really vary your passwords so that you don't have the same password for every account. I like that. Use reputable and registered firms, though we also just learned about some people who are like, no, the more unregulated, the better the chance that I'm going to make a big winning. So I have this theory now that a third of everybody, when I go to speak about pretty much anything, a third of people know as much as I do and really are like, I could have been up there. I'm like, yeah, please. A third of people are going to learn something that I hope will be helpful to them. And a third of people, no matter what I said, were still going to be scammed and defrauded. And some of the people with those high-risk that high-risk personality for investor abuse, I don't think that I could talk those people out of making the kind of investments that they're interested in making. But I'm that's just a working theory of mine, this three-thirds thing. We can talk about that over Chardonnay later. We are having Chardonnay later, right? Totally. Okay. Yeah, so... And then the last one was just don't wire. Don't ever wire. I mean, unless you know exactly who you're wiring money to. It's your. So what to do if you believe you're a victim? I have a handout. I have several handouts. My mother, who was a teacher, said never give out the handouts in advance because people will just read the handouts. So I have them up here. I'm going to put them out there. But I do have a handout because, you know, as I said before, once the money's gone, especially if it's been wired, in many, many cases, you cannot get the... It's really hard to get the money back, but and I'm not a lawyer. There is some recourse, whether it's because there was an unauthorized use of your credit card or unauthorized use of your debit card. If there were abusive robocalls, there's some recourse legally that way. There's always a cooling. Most products have a cooling off period. Most investment products. So I gave a call to the Bar Association of San Francisco today to see if they have resources, if people wanted to felt like they had been abused or someone they know had been a victim of a scam or a fraud. And they said that they would be happy to talk to people. They also have 2 legal clinics a month where people can go and talk to a lawyer and learn more about whether there is any legal recourse for what's ever gone on. There's also legal assistance to elders in San Francisco, and there's legal assistance for seniors in Oakland. So if you believe you're a victim, I think one of the other things I want to just go back over is only 14% of people are reporting. One of the handouts tells you where to report because, for example, if it's an investment thing, you may want to report to the Securities and Exchange Commission. If it has something to do with something else, it may go with a consumer fraud. It might go to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The Senate Aging Committee has a hotline for scams and frauds right now. So there are lots of places you can report. And I think going back to that sort of no shame, there is no shame in recognizing that something that you were a victim of a scam or a fraud. In fact, I would encourage everyone to shout it from the rooftops because you might then be helping other people not to become victims of abuse, of scams or frauds. So I'm going to just pivot for a second, and then we're going to open it up for questions and discussion. Because I wanted to go back to sort of elder abuse as a larger construct. What we know from studies is scams and frauds are quite prevalent, but when we talk about elder abuse, this feels like a very awkward segue. Who do you think the number one perpetrator of elder abuse, all kinds of elder abuse, not just financial abuse, are? Yeah, relatives. And what we've spent most of our time talking about is pretty much strangers. So there's some definitions of elder abuse where the definition is that this is a relationship that's predicated on trust. And we, none of us, trust those robocalls coming over the phone or a stranger emailing us. So it's a lot easier in many ways to talk about scams and frauds as it relates to older adults. It's much harder to talk about, you know, the adult child who perhaps is really troubled and needs money and or has an opioid addiction, which is very, you know, such a troublesome epidemic right now. You know, this is usually where I start singing What's Love Got to Do with It, you know, the Tina Turner song, because love has everything to do with it. You know, family violence, whether it's child abuse or domestic violence or elder abuse, we love often are deeply, deeply love the people who are end up hurting us. But I just wanted to make sure that we recognize that there is this other construct, which is elder abuse writ large. And financial abuse is a huge part of it, but it's financial abuse by family, as well as these scam artists who are waking up every morning looking to get to your savings. My partner, as I mentioned, we'll have to edit all this out, but she was in probate for years in the probate court, and she said that she had been a public defender, and she had had some situations where, like, somebody saw an older woman walking down the street, and they did, you know, a bump and grab, so grabbing a purse and running down the street, and she said, you know, that was really bad, but I got to probate, and people had been scheming for generations to take the house from the sister against the mother. And she said, I wasn't sure, but the veniality seemed much stronger, though I think we could, again, we could just say that they're both bad. So it's a, it's, as I said, it's a, it's something to just keep in mind, and maybe another time there would be a speaker to come in and talk about, again, like financial abuse, which is often affiliated with neglect, because people are like, oh, let's not spend mom's money on mom. Let's just not spend mom's money, because then there'll be more when mom is gone and I'm an heir. So we have, that's one way that neglect and financial abuse are connected. There's also emotional abuse. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about, like, the incredible value of caregivers, that caregivers are often giving selflessly, but there's a subset of caregivers who are also will also cross a line and do things they regret, whether that's emotional abuse or financial abuse or physical abuse. So anyway, so the opposite of elder abuse is elder justice. And it's a term that we're using a lot in the federal government now. And people are like, well, what does that actually mean? So what I think about it is, it's not just about saying, like, be careful, watch out, this is a bad thing. It's more like, how do we construct a society where older adults are valued, where their dignity and their independence is promoted as a priority? Because when you have things like, for example, senior centers, you break down isolation. When you have, you know, when you have all the funding you need to make sure that everybody can get a meal delivered to their home, you're breaking down isolation. If you have well-funded adult protective services or well-funded long-term care ombudsmen, who are the people in those are the social workers, sort of the boots on the ground, who are responding when a neighbor's like, yeah, you know, I think there's something going on down there. If they're well-funded, then you're intervening earlier and either stopping elder abuse from ever happening or intervening early enough and stopping it from happening again. So how do we make San Francisco a livable city where for older adults and adults with disabilities? That's what elder justice looks like. It's not just about preventing scams and frauds or preventing elder abuse. It's building together a place where the needs of older adults and adults with disabilities are the needs are met, and more importantly, the contributions of older adults and adults with disabilities are heralded and celebrated. So, I have just a few. I'll put these out. One of them is a flyer about a. For those of you so inclined, Monday, rally on the steps of City Hall about how to make San Francisco a livable city for older adults and adults with disabilities. And those others I'll talk about in a second. So let's take questions or comments.
We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to Avoiding Scams, Fraud, and Financial Exploitations. Our thanks to Mary Toomey. I'm Denise Michaud, co-chair of the Grownups Forum, and I'll be moderating today's audience question period. Mary, I'm sure we have a large number of questions. Oh, we have our first question.
Yeah. If I inadvertently answer the phone because I didn't look at caller ID, I have a stock answer.
Please.
And it's, would you please send all the information to my accountant? I'll give you his name and address.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you. Other people, other questions, or does anybody want to build on that? Yeah.
I have a transcript of a call that I've gotten 3 times now and reported each time. It's an IRS scam. And this is something you can look for, which is English that is somewhat ungrammatical. Received a notification regarding your tax filings from the headquarters, which will get expired in the next 24 working hours. And once again expired after that, you will be taken under custody by the local police, as there are 4 serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment. We would request you to get back to us so that we can discuss about this case before taking any legal action against you. The number to reach us is blah, blah, blah. I've gotten basically this same message 3 times. One person I know in my office has gotten it. One person with a competitor's has gotten it. So this is the one that's currently going around. Has anyone else gotten this? This is a scam.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you. Thank you. It's good to have examples of real life things and examples of how you all are shutting them down.
Okay. You're hacked and somebody gets your information. They open a credit card in your name. How do you prevent it?
So how do you prevent getting hacked?
You go to your doctor and his office got hacked. They got your social security number, your date of birth, your ID, all this stuff. How do you stop that?
So you can't. I mean, if your doctor's office, it's a really good question. We may do the very best we can to prevent from happening. We're not sharing stuff. We're being very careful, but someone else isn't as careful with our information, or, you know, I didn't mean to say isn't as careful. They may have been as careful as they could be, but they're targeted. And so it's more like, what do you do after it's happened, right? So one of the handouts is about what do you do about identity theft? Because that's identity theft. So, yeah. I don't know the answer. Does anybody want to? Okay.
I'm a credit manager. What you do in that situation is you go to the credit reporting agencies, Transepta, Experian, and you freeze your information so that they have to notify you, whomever is trying to look at your information, and you release it out. So if you apply for credit, they will contact you and say, so-and-so is looking for your report. And you say, okay, I wanted to buy that car. So yes, let them have it. That's what you do. The second you find out that anyone has breached some organization you're a part of.
Thank you.
I do it just for fun.
Okay. My question is, when you get these calls from Microsoft support, and you get so many of them, and they're obviously from India, I guess. I was told that if they scam you, that because they're out of the country, they can't really go, the FBI or whoever can't really go after them. Is that true?
I don't know.
It is true?
There you go. It is true.
Okay, so
could we have the microphone down here?
Yeah, here.
Yes, I dealt for 2 years. My father was scammed out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I contacted the FBI, Homeland Security, even Secret Service. And I even talked to a few senators, an aide to Senator Nelson in Florida, because we have it bad, but Florida has it worse. And there is some work in the last year only that they are trying to interdict with, forcing the countries, like with my father, it was a Jamaican lottery scam, and forcing Jamaica to be a little more pushing to arrest the scammers, identifying them there. But everyone I ever spoke to is once that money is wired out of the country,
it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. I know that about wiring. I didn't know about interdiction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know about anybody else in the room, but we got our new Medicare cards.
Yes.
So at least you're not carrying your Social Security number.
But you, it won't surprise you to know that there was a huge bunch of scams around the new Medicare card. Yeah, sir.
You mentioned about question and comments. First comment. I really like very much the way you ended. In other words, there must be a way that we can really create, construct a new environment so that the older adult have a better opportunity to live better. So that is really, really important. In other words, we really have to see perspective of solution. And now, in terms of me, I was in early days, I was a bit more looking for opportunities. But I remember a relative of mine, old days, said that he will shoot a bird when the bird is cooked and is in the dish. Super conservative approach. When the bird is killed and is in the dish, then I shoot the bird. So that's kind of, I remember that they said this guy must have had some kind of talent of being afraid of the, you know, we really need to protect yourself these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I'm a really open person in general. Yeah. And I feel like I spend a lot of time telling people, don't be open. Be aware. Be scared. Be vigilant. Be hypervigilant. What's the opposite? What's after hypervigilant? And, you know, I think that, but that kind of goes back. I sort of feel that the most important part of what I've said, because really there is so much information about scams and frauds out there. And so for people who are interested, this is the Consumer Reports Protect Yourself from Scams that just came out. And at the federal level, again, SEC, FTC, Treasury, CFPB, FBI, they have a ton of information. I really think the most important thing is to know how are you vulnerable? How am I vulnerable? And if you don't know, then you need a really close friend to be able to tell you, you're getting vulnerable. And vulnerable has become like this dirty word. Maybe it's always been a dirty word in America, being vulnerable. Sort of like, I wanted to call this talk, Denise is going to laugh at me, I wanted to call this talk, How the Marlboro Man Was Wrong, America's Obsession with Independence and How It Hurts Us in the End. And she said, what is this about smoking? Because my vision of the sort of American icon, and here I am really just on a soapbox, so let me just apologize for stepping on the soapbox for a second, but my image of America's, of the Marlboro Man is like, he's always alone, except for the horse, and he's, you know, riding off into this gorgeous southwestern vista, and you have the sense that he relies on no one. And if that's the vision you're taking into aging, that's going to be you, you're going to get scammed, or you're going to get defrauded, or someone is going to take advantage of you. That's my fear. So I do spend an inordinate amount of time telling people to be afraid. But I think the opposite of that is be connected, make yourself vulnerable. And if you know, as I said, we're already planning in my estate plan is how do I, if I come into owning a multimillion dollar house in San Francisco, you know, from my lips to God's ears, now I'm fine. I could manage that at 79, at 89. So how do I plan for that now so that I recognize what's vulnerable about me or could be vulnerable? So my estate plan has to recognize that who I am today is not who I'm going to be in 10 years or 20 years. And how do you build, just like we build safety features into cars, how do we build safety features into our estate plan, recognizing that any of us could, for reasons way beyond our control, get an illness that makes our thought process, makes us our thought process, which leaves us vulnerable. Does that make any sense? Okay. Some people are saying yes. Other people are like, I lost her at the Marlboro Man. Yeah. Other hints, tips that you all have used to, yes, please. Oh, Elizabeth's coming.
I don't have a tip, but I have a question. So for people who, you mentioned it earlier, but get into relationships where they become vulnerable and, you know, whether it was the original intent or not, and a lot of times it's an age discrepancy relationship. Someone's a lot older, someone's a lot younger, and they get themselves into the trust or whatever. Are there any protections against that?
Every case is really individual. And so a lot of times lawyers are required to untangle. Did the person understand that when she left the house to the pool boy, did she actually understand the impact of that decision? It seems to have resonated. There was a pool boy. I just use that because I don't think anybody has a pool boy, but heck. There's new research coming out all the time about neurological testing so that we can help people screen for decisions when people have decisional ability. But, you know, those are really, really difficult. Again, because people's hearts are breaking as well as they are losing money. I'll just say here, like, if I just talked to someone the other day and ended up talking about whether or not her father needed to come under a conservatorship, which, you know, the probate court. And, what we are pushing more and more for, whether the court gets involved or not, is recognizing where that person still has decisional ability to take care of themselves, to manage some money, even as the judgment might be failing in terms of managing large, complex estates. So concepts of supporting decisions that the person still can make, care that is really centered on what the person's desires are instead of what the what my desires are for my mother might be really different. And where does she still have the ability to make those choices? So I remember years ago hearing about a judge who, there was a man losing a lot of money. He had a lot of money, so he could stand to lose some money every month, but the fear was that he was going to lose everything, and then what would happen then? So they created a conservatorship of the estate where he had access to about $1,000 every month to do whatever he wanted with. So he loved to bet on the ponies. He got to lose $1,000 a month or maybe make a couple thousand dollars a month, depending on his luck. But the rest of his estate was secured with others helping him make those decisions. But how do we help people not just like, okay, you don't have the capacity anymore to do this. We need to make it person-centered. We need to do it least restrictive, and we have to support the decisional ability that the older adult still has. But other tips? Questions?
I don't know whether I need to read this to the team here or not.
Sure.
Okay. Here.
This is an email?
Yeah. The picture of the guy is here in the email. Our Social Security Administration benefits can be equivalent of as much as $1 million retirement portfolio. $1 million. Yes, most won't take the time to understand the most basic elements of the plan. You know, then it gives a link. You have to push that link in order to get $1 million.
Yes, yes.
And it comes under wealthy retirement.
Yeah. What's interesting about that? I appreciate your sharing that. Is because, so they're appealing to you as an affinity group. You are obviously a wealthy retiree. So I would feel good if I got that, even though I am not a wealthy retiree. Also, many people will not take the time. Click here if you are not one of those ne'er-do-wells or one of those stupid people. So appealing, you know, to your intelligence, appealing to your shared wealth. The one that I got that I wasn't going to read, but the other thing I haven't mentioned much is when when they make you feel bad for turning them down. So when I hung up on the guy, you know, I picked it up, shouldn't have answered the phone, but I did. And he's like, "Oh, Mary," I'm like, "This is Jim," and da 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 da, and I just hung up, and he called back, and he was like, so I just let it go to voicemail, and he left this really long voicemail. "Mary, this is Jim. Now, you're not going to get anywhere in life if that's your attitude." Like, and so, you know, like, oh, am I missing something? Maybe I'm missing something. I actually had to, about 2 seconds, knowing I was coming here, I was like, that would be so embarrassing if I had to say, yeah, I just got scammed. But yeah, a lot of shame. Like, you're not going to, you know, I was going to offer you this free service where this guy was going to come to you, and you're so stupid, you wouldn't even talk to me. People, AARP has some great videos where when older adults have made relationships with scammers, when the older adult starts to assert themselves and say no, 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 the scammers get really, really nasty. They get really nasty. Did you have this experience with your father? Oh, I'm so sorry. So any other, do people want to share with, again, tips or how you?
I have one. My mom's 87, and I just tell her, "Mom, if someone calls you," and she says she gets at least 10 a day, she's very polite, "please take me off your list and don't call me again," and, you know, period, and then hang up. And that's what she says now.
Yep.
"Take me off your list. Please don't call again."
So. That's good. Somebody told me that they said, if it was the IRS, they say, "Oh, that's so funny. My son works for the IRS. He's right here." Click. That's good. So, you know, I was given permission once that I appreciate. I'm going to give it permission to you to lie to people when they call you. Lie. I've said to people, my mother, God rest her soul, is now deceased, but when she was still alive, if I was at her house and they called, I would say, "My mother's I can't believe you're infringing us now at this painful time. My mother is dead." And my mother's like, "I am not dead." I'm like, "I know, Mom, I know. Like, the important people know you're not dead, but we don't want them. We want them to think you're gone." So, sir? But use the microphone for talking.
Another example, I received an email from an associate that I knew. I'm in England. I'm at the hotel, and I'm here at the gate at the reception, and I need to check in, and they don't accept me. You know, I have to stay here 2 nights, and then can you please help me to stay here in this hotel? Yeah. Well, obviously I knew this person, and then I responded by email saying that to the email that I received. I was sent to email. I said, "Okay, why don't you give this a phone to the receptionist? I want to talk to him, to the receptionist." Then the email came in. "Oh, I'm in desperate need. Why do you want to talk to the receptionist? Please."
Right.
So you knew. Crazy.
Yeah. So this is an imposter.
I mean, they're also so stupid sometimes. You know, really a bit of intelligence, if you really have a sort of a gut feeling, use your gut feeling.
Yeah. So one more, and then.
That we found out about is after my parents died, like 4 or 5 months after, we suddenly were getting bills saying they owed all this money.
Oh, that's, I hadn't heard that one, but that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Again, going back to the point which I started with, which is we could spend, you know, hours and hours and hours, and tomorrow we would open our computer and there'd be something we had never heard of that nobody mentioned. So I really appreciate everyone sharing their tips and their stories. And thank you, ma'am, for having the real practical information about freezing your accounts with the credit bureaus. Thank you. I think I would be remiss, you know, so I work for the federal government. I work for what used to be called the Administration on Aging. It's now called the Administration for Community Living, because when you survey older adults and adults with disabilities, everybody wants to live in the community. And so we are working really hard on elder abuse issues, and it is a really bipartisan topic. It is not a blue topic or a red topic. It is just a topic that we know impacts elder abuse in general impacts 1 out of every 10 older adults in America. And sometimes people will say, "Oh, you mean in nursing homes?" I'm like, "Nope, I mean in the community."
Well, we have come to the end of our program, but do you want to make a comment about your color, the lavender purple color?
Every June 15th is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and the color of elder abuse is purple. So pretty much I just wear this jacket all day and every day in June. So I really hope that you will take a moment on Friday, June 15th, and do something to support older adults and adults with disabilities. Thank you, Denise, for the reminder.
Our thanks to Mary Toomey for her comments here today. We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating 115th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.